Matthew 22, reading 34 to 40. Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question: "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it: love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." We've entered 2026, and a new year is a time for resetting. Might be you're thinking about your diet or your exercise regime, your sleeping pattern, things that you want to learn, new skills that you want to acquire, relationships that you want to improve. And part of being in a fallen world is that good things don't come easily, and good things tend to deteriorate. If you ever see something beautiful or worthwhile or something that is functioning well, you can be sure it has taken a lot of hard work, from fine buildings and businesses to good meals and good marriages. They all take great effort. And if that is true of ordinary human activities, so too for spiritual growth and maturity. If you see a godly person full of maturity, that person has worked hard. Yes, it is God who is at work in us, and God has promised that he will bring to completion the work that he has begun in us, Philippians 1 verse 6. But that does not mean that we sit back and do nothing as Christians. Peter tells us in 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 5, make every effort to add to your faith goodness. And he then lists other characteristics that we're to work on. We are to make that effort, that every effort, to grow in maturity. And so as we begin a new year, I want us to consider where we should put that greatest effort. And really it's this: to love the Lord your God. Call it a reset or a resolution or simply a reminder, don't mind what you call it, but I want us to make this our focus. And if you want to remember this verse all year, so much the better. We're called to love the Lord our God. Maybe like the Ephesian church in Revelation, you've left your first love. Here is a call to love God again. Maybe you do love God. Here is a call to do so more and more. Maybe you've never loved God. Here is a call to begin loving him. I want to make 3 points. And really, we're just looking at the command from Matthew chapter 22 and Jesus' words in verse 37. First heading: to love God is the most important thing that you can do in 2026. The Pharisees came to Jesus to test him. They wanted to trap him. Their expert in the law, their spokesman, came up with this question that they had discussed together. It's a classic legal question that they love to debate. Verse 36, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" They wanted to get into some debate with Jesus. They wanted to show off their insights. But actually, this greatest commandment is not something that's up for debate. It is clear and it is obvious, as Jesus himself will show. He quotes from the law given by God to Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 6 and also Leviticus 19 that speaks about loving your neighbor as yourself. But we're focusing on Jesus' initial answer: love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. Both as the Creator and as their God who had brought them out of slavery in Egypt, the people of Israel were to love the Lord their God. But God is also our Creator. And if God created you, then you should love him. You cannot argue with that logic. You owe everything to God. Every cell in your body, every molecule of air that we breathe is entirely from God. And so when God calls us to love him, we simply cannot argue with that. If God is your creator, then you should love him. But more, if God is your Redeemer, love the Lord your God. The people had been brought out of Egypt by God's powerful hand, given a new land. We too have been redeemed. Christ has died for us, has made us children of God. If God has redeemed you, then that is further reason to love him. You can't argue with that. If God has rescued you from an eternal hell, surely you should love him. There is no debate about this. If he has created you and redeemed you and redeemed the whole of you, then we should love him with the whole of ourselves. Again, it's perfectly logical. If God has made all of you, then love him with all of you. If God has redeemed you in your entirety, then love him with your whole being. You can't argue with it. This is not a question for debate. And really, this expert in the law has put himself in a bit of a trap here. He thinks there's something to be debated, but there's not. There's something to be obeyed. And that's Jesus's point. This, says Jesus, is the first and greatest commandment. There's no objection to it. And no one here this morning, just like those Pharisees, could object to this command. And we're not just to obey God, but we're to love God. Not begrudgingly, but wholeheartedly. Let's just look at some of these words that Jesus uses. Love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. What is the heart? The heart is your inner self. Your thinking, your feeling, your choosing. The word heart is frequently used in both Old and New Testaments. Throughout the Bible, the heart is addressed, the inner self. And God is to be the most cherished person in your inner self. By far, you are to love God with all of your heart. Nothing should take his place. No one holds the affection of your heart like God does. And whatever else gives you joy in life, and God gives us many things to enjoy, but whatever else gives you joy, you find your greatest joy in God. Love the Lord your God with all your heart. This is not an outer thing. This is not a question of turning up on Sundays to church and performing certain rituals like all too many churches focus on. It's not about the externals. It's about the heart. It's about the inner self. It's about the whole of you, all of your heart. And then we're to love him with all your soul. What is the soul? The soul is the inner being. It is that life that endures beyond death. The scriptures talk about body and soul. Death is when body and soul are separated. The soul is your inner being. And you are to be ready to give God your very life. We read from Isaiah 53, and towards the end of that chapter, the prophet says how the servant poured out his soul unto death. Jesus gave his life. He died. He gave everything. He gave his life. And you too, you see your life as belonging to God. You serve him. You obey him. You're to love him with all your soul. And you're to love him with all your mind. What is your mind? Your mind is your thinking, but it's also your moral reasoning. This is how it's used in Scripture. It's not just that you study hard and you think and you work out. And yes, of course we do that. And we're to do that in a way that glorifies God. But it's also the truths that we accept. It's the views that we hold. And to love God with all your mind is to gladly accept God's view. To accept his words. To grant that his commands are true and right. To love God with all your mind is not just to think with integrity, but it's to hold to the truths of God and to love them, to see that his words are true, that God's view is right. And so we're called to love God with the whole of our beings. There was a man called William Booth. He was a tireless evangelical preacher in Victorian times, British man. He cared a lot for the poor. He was the one, does anyone know what organization he founded? The Salvation Army, yes. And certainly started off well. He was a strong evangelical preacher. And he worked all his life tirelessly. And one day his son asked him the secret of his strength. And his father explained that when he was younger at a Methodist church in Nottingham, he had vowed that God should have all that there was of William Booth. Years later, his daughter added this: "Actually, my father's secret was that he never took it back. He devoted himself to God, all that he had, but he never took it back. Throughout his days, his great desire was to serve God, to live for God, to love God with all his heart, with all his soul, with all his mind." And I want you to say with me, not literally out in words, well, if you want to, you can, but say to God, "You will I love, my Lord and God. To you I give my heart and life. You will I love again this year as I serve you gladly and obey." Is that your desire, that you want to love God? This is the greatest thing, the greatest command, and therefore the most important thing that you can do this year. Whatever other plans you may have, whatever other resolutions you may have made, may this be what undergirds everything that you do. Make this a reset, that you want to put God as the greatest person, your greatest love. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. It's the most important thing you can do this year. My second heading: to love God is the most difficult thing you can do in 2026. It's perfectly logical that we should love God. He created us. He has redeemed us. He is worthy of our love. He is the infinite God. But it's still the most difficult thing to do. It's right to renew our vows to him. It's right for us together as a church to reset our hearts and minds in a Godward direction. In worship together as God's people, we are meant to stir each other up to love and good works. But we all know that come Monday, come Tuesday, or some other day, we will find it difficult. And we need to be honest with ourselves. Sometimes we'd prefer to say to God, "I'll love you so long as it fits with my plans. I'll obey you when it's convenient for me. I'll serve you so long as I don't have to serve you too much, and so long as others are pulling their weight too. I'll love your words so long as they don't grate too much with what I think is best." We might not say it, but our attitudes can very easily become, "I'll love God if I can love me first." To love God is the most difficult thing that you can do in 2026. You see, loving ourselves is the message that the world gives us constantly. Now, as you know, I'm not a great follower of social media, but I suspect social media, just like any other media, is full of this message. Be kind to yourself this year. Look after yourself this year. No one else is going to look out for you like you can look out for yourself. That's the constant message that we get. It's a message we'll get from our colleagues and our non-Christian friends. It's the message that celebrities, important people, politicians will constantly give. Your teacher at school will be telling you, work hard because then you'll be able to achieve this for yourself. The Christian has such a different attitude at school. You work hard for God. You love God. But the world constantly tells us to love ourselves, and we like that message. It makes us feel good. It's the old sinful nature trying to reassert its dominion over us. Sin does not like it when we love God. Sin wants us to love ourselves. It's the devil's snare that he has set to trap us again. It's the snare that he grips the world with. It says in 2 Timothy 3, in the last days, people will be lovers of themselves rather than lovers of God. Or you think of the example of Demas. Demas was a great colleague of Paul's. They served together for we don't know how long, but maybe years. But when Paul was imprisoned and things were going tough, Demas abandoned Paul. Why? Because he loved this present world. It's easy to love the world, to love ourselves. It's difficult to love God. And so we're not to be surprised that the greatest commandment is also the hardest commandment. We'll be tempted to be half-hearted in our love, to think that doing a certain amount for God is sufficient. We'll be tempted to be content with being an empty shell, an appearance of love, rather than the reality of loving him in our hearts. We'll be tempted to be like the Pharisees, with their outward conformity, but inner poverty. It is a hard thing to love God. Think for a moment. What times are you most vulnerable? I think for many of us, it's when we're tired, and all we want is to look after ourselves. Now, I'm not saying we do need to rest. We do need to, in that sense, care for our bodies. You know, we were reading in Ephesians, no one ever hated his own body. Ephesians 5. But when we're tired, we can be very tempted to become selfish. Or maybe it's when you're overworking, or maybe when you're underworking in times of leisure. Maybe it's when you're disappointed, and that becomes a disappointment with God. And when you're disappointed with God, then it's hard to love God. What are the times when you are most vulnerable? Be wise. Be aware of those times. Note them. Prepare for them. And most of all, pray beforehand. Surely you must realize those occasions where you can almost predict in advance when you're most likely to be selfish, to be self-centered, and to forget to love God. Pray in advance. This is what Jesus taught his disciples as he was in Gethsemane. They were sleepy, he was praying. And he knew that they were going to deny him. And he said, pray, watch and pray, lest you fall into temptation. But instead of praying, they fell asleep. Pray. Pray that God would help you at those difficult times when it's not easy to love him with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. And so pray with me. Say to God now, help me, my Lord and God, to give my heart to you at all times. Help me to love you again this year. Help me to serve you gladly and obey. Thirdly, we've seen firstly that to love God is the most important thing that you can do in 2026. To love God is the most difficult thing that you can do in 2026. And thirdly, to love God is the most rewarding thing you can do in 2026. Now, there's no explicit promise of reward in this verse. Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. There's no promise there. But a reward is the logical conclusion of that commandment. Think of it like this. If God is eternal, if God is the loving God whom you believe him to be, and he is, then simply to love him is to be rewarded. Not with wreaths or riches, but with closeness to him. With the greatest relationship possible. You see, to love him with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind is to be taken up with him. It's to adore him with all that you are. It's to be in loving relationship with him. And that is the greatest reward. You remember the story of Abraham. And God had made these wonderful promises to Abraham. Promises of a land, promises of so numerous descendants, promises that he would be a blessing. And years on, Abraham is in the promised land, but he doesn't own a square foot of that land. He doesn't yet have a son. He hasn't become a blessing to the nations. God seems to have disappointed him. God appears to him in Genesis 15, and he simply says this, I am your very great reward. As yet, Abraham had received none of the outward blessings, but he had God. He had obeyed God. He had trusted God. He learned to love God. He was described as God's friend. You see, to know God, to have him as your God, that is the reward. And honestly, could there be anything better than having God as your God, the one who watches over you, who cares for you, who loves you, who will be with you, who will bring you into eternity forever? Imagine you could choose this year to have the greatest imaginable success. Some of you will be taking exams. Some of you will be applying for jobs. Some of you will have hopes of. But imagine the greatest possible success or wealth or power, whatever it is that, you know, you might want to have. But tell me, what would you rather have? That success, that prosperity, that power, or being able to say of God, he is mine and I am his. Jesus said, of what profit is it to someone to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit his very soul? When you love God, you are in that eternal relationship. That is the reward. I wonder, what do you see in this greatest commandment of all? God says to you, love me with all your heart. Love me with all your soul. Love me with all your mind. What do you see in that command? Maybe you see a pointing finger that condemns you because you haven't loved him with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. Maybe you see a rod that beats you and forces you to work harder. Maybe you see a cage that restricts you. Oh, you want freedom to be out there, but no, I've got to love God with everything. I'm in this restricted cage. Or do you see it as an invitation to respond to God's love? It is a command. We are to love God. But when you realize what God is saying here, you see it as an invitation to the greatest wedding possible. Now, I don't know if this year is going to hold some great royal wedding or some great celebrity's wedding. I do know there's one person who's going to be getting married this year, but imagine the greatest possible wedding. Well, here's an invitation to it. But not to be the guest. Now, it's a wonderful thing, isn't it, to get invited to a wedding. And I love going to weddings. You know, everyone looks so beautiful in their outfits and dresses. And, you know, the food is wonderful. The weather's, I mean, it's almost always sunny at a wedding, isn't it? Have you ever been to a raining wedding? I don't remember going to a wedding when it rains. The sun is always out when at a wedding. Weddings are great. It's wonderful to be a guest at a wedding. But this isn't an invitation to be a guest. It's an invitation to be the bride. God says, love me. Love me. Will you love me? This is an invitation into an eternal and most beautiful relationship. It's nothing short of God's marriage proposal to anyone and everyone who will love him. He says, love me even as I love you. Give me your heart and soul as I have given mine to you. Jesus poured out his soul unto death. Why? You cannot fail to see in Isaiah 53 that again and again and again and again we're told it was for us. All we like sheep have gone astray. The Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He poured out his soul to death for you. That's the extent of his love. And so when he says, love me, this is not a finger to accuse, it's not a rod to bash us, it's not a cage to restrict us. This is an invitation to the greatest life and love possible. It's why he made you. Maybe this is something you've never done before. Maybe it's something you've never realized. Maybe you've only seen God as the lawgiver and the judge. I want you to see him today as the lover and the husband. You've seen him only as someone you have to please, not as someone you want to please. There's a huge difference, isn't there? Say to God now, you will I love, my Lord and God. To you I give my heart. You will I love this year and always, as I serve you gladly and obey. Let's be quiet for a few moments to respond, each one of us from our hearts to God, and then we'll sing.